It may be that the gulfs will wash us down. It may be we shall touch the Happy Isles and see the great Achilles whom we knew. Though much is taken, much abides, and though we are not now that strength which in old days moved earth and heaven, that which we are, we are. One equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield.
Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few. I hope, indeed I pray, that we shall not be found unworthy of our victory if after toil and tribulation it is granted to us. For the rest, we have to gain the victory. That is our task.
Let us therefore brace ourselves to our duty, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its commonwealths last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
We shall not fail or falter. We shall not weaken or tire. Neither the sudden shock of battle nor the long-drawn trials of vigilance and exertion will wear us down. Give us the tools, and we will finish the job.
We shall go on to the end. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
you go. I hope you enjoyed that, ladies and gentlemen. Surprise the man. I love that tune. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the English Defence League radio show broadcasting live on blogtalkradio.com. The English Defence League radio show. The truth and the voice of the EDL. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to thank Dave for the great slides for this evening and, of course, for the great script. And here's the banner for the show this evening. English Defence League radio show, 2,000 Mules. And I'll continue to say, welcome to the English Defence League radio show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. And my wingman is Dangerous Dave Milner. Tonight we'll be discussing the eye-opening documentary, 2,000 Mules, in a revealing look at the method used to steal national elections. If it's happened in the United States of America, there is no doubt that it's happened, being a regularly used tool for voter fraud in the UK and across the planet. While the lapdogs of the globalists pretend nothing is wrong, we know the truth and we'll bring it to you, our great listeners. No surrender ever. All that's necessary for evil to prevail is that good men do nothing. And of course, that was a politician in the 1770s, Edmund Burke. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And of course, that was by the late great President John F. Kennedy. So without further ado, let me bring on my great friend, my colleague from across the pond, over in the great Vermont, and of course the listeners across the United States of America, and the global audience that we know that listens to us. So with that, Dave, let me pass this mic across the pond to you. You better catch it. I'm going to drop it in. It might go in the sea there, bro. Here it comes. Over you, Dave.
Got it, Jeff. Thank you. Yes.
Well,
and hello
I saw
to
that.
Everybody.
That was well held, sir.
thank you. Yeah. Well, I want to say hello to everyone around the world and, of course, off Earth. We do have a big, big show here. And hearing the title 2,000 Mules, if those of you listening think that this only applies, this is why we put this in the script. If you think that this only applies to the United States, just think about elections around the world. France really comes to mind because it was said, well, France's elections are more secure because they have paper ballots. Well, not so much. And, of course, elections in Canada, New Zealand, other countries, the UK, we're talking about one method. Now, we ran Mike Lindell's documentary, Absolute Proof, some time ago, and that pointed out the flaws in the computerized voting systems. This one points out the flaws with paper ballots, mail-in ballots, ballot box stuffing, and things of that nature. And it goes into great detail, and the numbers, people, will blow your minds. But first, before we get into it, and again, emphasizing that this is just the United States. This is very likely happening all over the world. But before we get into it, if you want to get into the chat here and get a shout out from Jeff, we podcast here live every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. in the UK. That's 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States. And if you want to get into the chat, yes, go to blogtalkradio.com, look at the white top center search box, type in English Defence League Radio Show or EDL Radio, follow the links, and if you are registered with Blog Talk Radio, you too can get in the chat, and Jeff will give you a shout-out. And Jeff, before we dive right into this, do we have anybody in chat?
Yes, we have a couple of gentlemen in the chat, and of course that is a very own Duck Northwest Media has joined us this evening, and he's becoming regular like it was last week. So it's good to see you. I hope you're keeping well, and good to see you here. And of course, we've got our very own Bigfoot as well. He's joined us, and they're both saying good evening to myself and you, Dave. So there you go. I'm just seeing if there's anything else there. They're just saying hi to each other, actually. So let me see. Duck Northwest Media, does OBFSU have a chat room on his Simon Nickel program? I don't know, actually. I don't know that one. He may not have a live program, he says. But I think he might be talking to Bigfoot, possibly, because I do know, we know OBFSG, didn't we, Jay? Dave, I think we do. And I'm sure, I'm sure there was. He did have a radio show, didn't he? Or once a week or so. But let me pass it back to you. You might be able to enlighten the chat. I'm getting a comment already by Bigfoot saying, yes, there's a chat on his Spreaker program. So there you go, he's just informed Duck Northwest Media, Dave. So with that, let me pass it back to you, Grub.
All right, and welcome to Duck Northwest Media, and Biggie, welcome to you. Bigfoot's Place at blogspot.com or bigfootsplace.blogspot.com is Biggie's blog there, and you can hear that and get more enlightenment. Now, I'm going to go ahead and begin with this, and this may well take up two shows, guys, because I've portioned this off into seven parts, and we do have a very nice kicker from Congressman Mo Brooks afterward. So we're just going to carry on, and we'll make comments in between, obviously. Now, this film is put out by Dinesh D'Souza, and I have put his website address in our live Blog Talk Radio page here. So if you want to go down and look at his stuff, maybe contribute to him, whatever you want to do, things of that nature, because you're not getting the video portion here on our show. You're just getting the audio, but there's a lot of eye-opening information in this. And Jeff, if you're ready, we'll begin with part one.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Ready or wrong.
All right. Okay, guys, this is going to be 14 minutes and about 14 and a quarter minutes. So let's begin this. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show. Here's part one of 2,000 Mules.
We have a great video to show you guys because it's basically like you were also at that premiere and now at this premiere. So we are going to play that clip for you guys right now. Please join me in welcoming the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
It's my great honor to be here tonight for the premiere of the blockbuster documentary 2,000 Mules. I just told Dinesh that I've had about 12 calls today of people in different parts of the country. They can't get tickets. It's sold out all over the place. They cannot get in. I want to thank Catherine Engelbrecht because you are an incredible woman. And also Greg Phillips. Greg, I want to thank Greg, your brilliant idea of using cell phone location data. What a job you did, and all of the patriots that threw the vote for their extraordinary work. Let me also express my tremendous gratitude to Dinesh D'Souza, who's an incredible movie maker and documentarian. Salem Media Group, where are you? Would you take a bow, because you see, people have been incredible. And you're doing great, and your ratings happen to be very good, okay? I've been watching. Your ratings are very good. I want to also thank everyone involved in this genius production, and that's what it is. You'll see that in just a little while tonight. We will expose the lies of the radical left Democrats, the rhinos, the fake news, many of whom are here tonight. I hope you're enjoying it. And they say that the 2020 was the most secure election in history.
And it was the least secure election in our history. They used COVID to cheat. They used the mail-in ballots to cheat. And right now, the media is trying to find a way how they're going to say, well, this doesn't mean anything. Anyone who watches this film will come away very much a different person, saying to themselves that our country's elections are run worse than those of a third world nation, and that's the fact. The evidence of this documentary demands immediate action from federal, state, and local law enforcement. People that did this are true patriots. This group of people right here, these are true patriots. Salem, they are true, great patriots. Our country is going to hell. And you know, when they say 2.5 years, I say, are we going to have a country in 2.5 years? Because I really don't know the answer. I believe that this is the most dangerous period of time in the history of the United States. So I think you're going to, in one way, enjoy it because it's a work of genius. In another way, you may leave here very, very depressed. I just ask you this. Do something about it. Don't say. Because there are no excuses. This is irrefutable. I'm talking about the media, very importantly, and I'm talking about the politicians, the weak politicians. You got to do something about it, because you can't let this happen. You can't let this happen to our country. Thank you very much for being here, and enjoy it. Thank you.
Wow. Well, it's my delight to welcome to the stage someone who really needs no introduction, but, you know, I was told to introduce this person, but he is the director and producer of 2000 Mules. You may know him for his documentaries, 2016, Obama's America. You may know him for his book. Of course, I just know him as my dad. You may know him for his intellect, his wit, his debates. But my favorite thing about him is really his courage and his tenacity to always fight for what he believes in. So please welcome to the stage, Dinesh D'Souza.
This film is, without question, the most important film that I've done. And I think it is the most important issue facing the country right now. We have seen, just in the last few years, many of the core principles and even guardrails of our society that we normally take for granted being pulled down. A right to free speech, a right to be treated equally under the law, a right not to have the state go after its political opponents, and now the very sanctity of our ballot, the integrity of the vote. I want to introduce some of the heroes of this film. And I want to begin with the two people without which this film would not be possible. In fact, the two people who have, I can only tell you, suffered much and endured much and been under all kinds of travails, and yet they have persisted. And they have done the work that the FBI should have done, and the Justice Department should have done, and lots of other people should have done, that were, quite honestly, in a position to do it. But it took this small, intrepid organization, True the Vote, and its two principals, who are my heroes and are heroes of the film. Please welcome Greg Phillips and Catherine Engelbrecht. Guys, take a bow, give a wave. Thanks for coming up. This film would not have been possible without you. And Greg, thank you for your genius work in a very difficult area to really bust a Democratic criminal cartel. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. I also want to publicly acknowledge and thank Salem Media. Salem is a big radio network with a lot at stake. And it's a public company. And this, I think you know, is the most taboo, the most banned topic in the United States. It gets you immediately thrown off mainstream social media, Facebook, YouTube. So when we took this project to Salem Media, we did it with some trepidation. Like, would they shy away from it the way so many people, so many on the right, a little nervous, a little scared about this issue? However, Salem looked at the evidence that Catherine and Greg presented. We had kind of a mini summit, and they were like, we are a media company. How can we ignore the most important story in the country? How can we pretend that this is not news? At the very least, this needs to be seen and discussed and debated. So let me publicly acknowledge Salem. We have one Salem representative here, Eric Metaxas, but you'll see there are a number of Salem hosts in the movie. And so, Eric, where are you? On behalf of Salem, take a bow. We're delighted you're here. Eric is genuinely one of the funniest guys in the country. He needs his own TV show. And he's the funniest guy in the movie also. So thank you, Salem Media. Thank you, Eric.
Wow. Thank you, guys. Well, I think that we are now getting to the moment you've all been waiting for, which is to actually watch the film 2,000 Mules. Right, Eric?
Right. It's amazing. If you haven't seen it, buckle your seatbelts, because this is real, it is irrefutable, it's astonishing, and here it is.
Here we go.
We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
Every time we vote, we're standing up side by side with the Founding Fathers, with the men of Valley Forge, with patriots and pioneers throughout our history, with all those who dedicated their lives to making this a nation of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Elections are the lifeblood of our democracy. They are the mechanism by which the American people choose who is going to rule on their behalf and for their interests and welfare. Without elections, there would be no way for the American people, for us, to exercise our legitimate sway on the future direction of this country.
Polls now closed in half the country, and we are getting some interesting results coming in from those battleground states.
If you're a Republican, you say, wow. If you're a Democrat, you say, uh-oh.
Do you see Donald Trump is now starting to widen his lead? President Trump now with 54% of the vote.
The president right now has the lead in the Keystone State.
We're going to have a great night, and we're going to have, much more importantly, we're going to have a great 4 years.
The 2020 election haunts the American mind.
Here's where it gets really bizarre. At Fulton County, most populous county, it is Atlanta, they just stopped counting.
Nevada, meanwhile, has stopped counting votes.
They've all stopped counting for the night.
All right, welcome back. This is CNN special live coverage, 10:31 a.m. on the East Coast. Why am I giving you the time? Well, if you managed to sleep last night, things changed. You may have gone to bed thinking this election was headed one way, and then you woke up and you saw things were different.
Also overnight, Joe Biden pulled ahead in the state of Georgia.
Joe Biden takes the lead in Pennsylvania.
Okay, we have an announcement to make.
Joe Biden has run for president 3 times, and the 3rd time has turned out to be the charm.
One side insists it was the most secure election in U.S. history.
Let me begin with one immutable fact. The 2020 election was the most secure election in American history.
It was the cleanest election, the safest election, the most secure election ever run.
And make no mistake, there has been no evidence of any significant widespread voter fraud.
Let me say it again.
The 2020 election was the most secure
election in American history.
Period.
This same side accuses anyone who disagrees with them of perpetrating a
big lie or the big delusion.
The big lie keeps getting repeated.
The big lie is just that, a big lie.
And despite a relentless media barrage, the other side remains convinced there was widespread election fraud.
what I saw was not a secure and transparent election.
Poll watchers claim the Travis County Clerk's office is locking them out.
Last night there was a major software glitch that actually delayed the counting of all of the ballots.
A look at election fraud, and I want to look at secretaries of state who illegally changed the voter laws without the permission of their state legislature.
There have been numerous attempts to prove election fraud.
The van dropping off ballots in the early morning hours of November 4th, 8 hours past the deadline.
She said her mother was in a nursing home and did not have the mental capacity to vote.
We've obtained video tonight that shows a man dropping several ballots into a drop box.
Scottsdale woman pleads guilty to casting a ballot in her dead mother's name.
Shows a man buying a registration form for an absentee ballot from a voter, giving him, quote, pocket money, unquote, of $200.
Yet courts have refused to consider these cases on the merits.
The Supreme Court rejecting an effort by Republicans to reverse President-elect Joe Biden's win in Pennsylvania.
The Supreme Court has rejected the Texas-led effort to toss out election results in four key states.
Even some Republicans dismiss the idea of systematic fraud and call for us to move on.
Fraud did not play a role in the outcome of the election.
The election was fair as we've seen. We simply did not win the election as Republicans for the presidency.
Rather than reject what happened on the 6th, reject the lies about the election, and make clear that a president who engaged in those activities can never be president again.
But we can't move on unless we know the truth. Many other issues arise out of the 2020 election. Did the January 6th protesters go to D.C. to mount an insurrection? It wasn't an insurrection. It was a primal scream. They wanted their elected leaders to adjudicate the claims of election fraud. The left's claim that this was the most secure election is also the foundation for the widespread censorship on social media of the so-called big lie.
This morning, President Trump waking up without his favorite megaphone.
You will never again see a tweet from President Trump.
But is it a big lie? Is it a lie at all?
And that's part one. Welcome back to the English Spencer Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. Jeff, what did you think about that intro and getting ready to get into it?
Yeah, I was just getting into that. I didn't realize that it was going to... I was just about rolling a cigarette out then, and I thought I was still ready for another 5 minutes. I didn't realize the time had gone so quick. Interesting. I like the opening, and as I've always said that... they will be found out for what they did, and it seems like there was a lot of collusion involved. Massive, massive collusion, and we've always said it. And no matter what the left say, the rest of them, I was there that night. I'll see when all the computers went down, and then I'll see when it restarted exactly what was going on. No one could tell me that wasn't a con job of working. That was when the fix was in. When them computers went down, that's when the fix began. And I watched it. So, but I like the introduction. I like hearing the real president speaking about the 2,000 mules. And I like the guy that's done this and his other team putting it together. So, very good so far, enjoying it, and that's what I'm saying. I was just waiting for another 5 minutes of it to go on, Dave. I was intrigued to see how it was playing out, but it's well done at the moment. That's all I've got to say about it. So I'd rather comment as we go a bit further on, because I think I've made the comments that we've always known, and the trouble, the rhinos is in bed with the Democrats, and you could smell the stench of the corruption still lingers, doesn't it, even across from your side of the pond through over here, Dave. And so there you go. That's just my first observations, Dave. Back to you.
All right. And yes, we'll have a lot more to comment on. And Jeff, if you want to check the chat to see if they have anything to say, just briefly. Yes, we knew that there were problems immediately on election night. We knew there were going to be problems, and it just mounted and got worse. So, Jeff, if there isn't anything out of the chat, we'll crack on and hit part two. Are we ready?
Yeah, no, they were just talking about what we mentioned earlier on in the chat. So, no, crack on, Dave. Yeah, let's continue. Thank you, mate.
All right, guys. This is going to be part two. And we're really getting into it now. 2,000 Mules. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show.
Hey, I'm Dinesh D'Souza, and this is season one, episode one of my new podcast. I started my podcast in early 2021 to speak the truth. But by simply asking questions about election fraud, you get booted from YouTube and Facebook. My podcast is sponsored by Salem Media, and I knew that other Salem hosts felt my frustration. Larry Elder, Dennis Prager, Eric Metaxas, Sebastian Gorka, Charlie Kirk.
Let me begin by asking a very simple question. Do we feel confident or comfortable that we know the truth about what really happened in the 2020 election?
I'm agnostic on this question, and I am awaiting more information.
What about you, Eric?
I think Dennis is a coward. Honestly, it's almost funny to me that you're agnostic. And I think most Americans know that we don't know what happened and are not okay with that, by the way.
I'm supposed to believe that a man who didn't campaign or campaign from his basement got more votes than the first black president in America? I don't believe it.
Charlie, we have crumbs. We have some evidence here and there, but the picture is far from complete. Larry, in your race, you were asked straight out, right? Do you believe that the 2020 election was stolen? What was your answer, and do you abide by that answer as of right now?
My answer was that Donald Trump is in Mar-a-Lago, and Joe Biden is in 1500 Pennsylvania Avenue. The lawsuits did not succeed. Do I believe there was shenanigans? Do I believe there were irregularities? Absolutely, and said so. This is probably the most loathed president I've ever seen. I thought Richard Nixon was loathed. I thought George W. Bush was loathed because of the Iraq War. I've never seen the level of vitriol against this man every single day. I think there was a study that found 91% of the news of ABC, NBC, CBS Nightly News against Donald Trump was negative. Dogged by a bogus 2.5-year collusion investigation. And then on the eve of the election, this Hunter Biden story drops, which shows that Joe Biden completely lied about his lack of knowledge of what his son was doing, and it was suppressed. And even the CEO of Twitter later on admitted that it was suppressed and shouldn't have been. That alone would have altered the election. You add all that up, my point is, this man is so low, I wouldn't put it past the Democrats to do virtually anything to make sure he doesn't get another 4 years.
If I believed the president were a Nazi, I might steal an election.
If we were Germans in the 1930s, we'd steal the election from Hitler if we could.
If I'm that indoctrinated, of course I can justify it.
I think it was Jane Fonda who said that COVID was God's gift to the left, right? It wrecks the empirical positives of the Trump economy, but here's the other. It enables a whole bunch of things on the other side to change the rules of the election. So the point is, in a COVID environment, is it not conceivable that Trump could have lost fair and square?
I think millions of Americans know something went wrong, and they have little pieces, and no one's really put it together. They know that there is injustice. They know it in their gut. They know it through the bellwether counties where Donald Trump won almost every single one of the predictive counties that show who's going to be president. And then they also know it where they went to bed thinking Trump was going to have 4 more years and they woke up with the exact opposite.
We have an individual who could fill a stadium with 60,000 supporters in 24 hours. But it's an individual, you know, the famous photograph of the six empty circles at a Biden rally. We have an incumbent president who received more votes than any other incumbent president in American history, who actually got 10 million more votes than he did 4 years prior, and who received more support after 4 years of being called a racist and a white supremacist more support from the Hispanic and black community than any Republican president since the 1960s. And he was beaten by a machine politician who couldn't speak clearly, who on the campaign stage would confuse his sister with his wife. It just stinks.
Now, is it possible that the very success of Republicans down ballot, I'm talking about Republicans running for the House, running for the Senate, running for other races, the fact that the Republicans as a party did pretty well, but Trump lost, doesn't that work the other way and undercut the idea that there was systematic fraud?
It's an anomaly, because if he really, when a president really loses, he has tails. What is it called?
Coattails.
Coattails. And the down ballots lose, but they won. Why didn't they cheat on all of those? Why didn't they cheat in Virginia with Youngkin?
But and who's to say they didn't cheat? Not all attempts at cheating succeed.
You're right.
One other question. In the Republican Party, I keep hearing people who seem annoyed at the revisiting of the 2020 election. Their attitude appears to be, let bygones be bygones. Let's just move on.
I think the reason that many Republicans are saying let's move on is because bold accusations require bold evidence, and they haven't seen it.
And because they know how vulnerable they are and how much they're going to be bashed.
Well, yeah, you're called a sore loser. You're called a conspiracy theorist.
The people who say that, let's move forward, are people in the elite who see Donald Trump as an anomaly.
You will not win in any district in this country because you have said that the 2020 election was a fraud. And if they can't win on this issue, then don't use it.
Well, it doesn't have to be the only issue, but their unwillingness even to speak up about it, I think, is despicable.
Show me the proof, and I'll bet you they do speak up, just like I will speak more. And I'm not running for office, but I have not gone on board of, I know for a fact this was a fraud.
Show me the money.
Now look, I mean, the Democrats, they have a history of voter fraud. Going back to Tammany Hall in the 19th century, we've fast forward to LBJ stealing his first race in Texas, John F. Kennedy, the allegations that he stole the presidency with voter fraud in Texas and in Illinois.
They've done it before.
I mean, you can have someone who has a criminal record and they're fully capable of robbing a bank, but did they rob the bank?
Well, it looks like it.
What does our friend Catherine think about all this?
Catherine's been a little quiet, but I think that that means that they're working on something. I think that you should give her a call and see what she thinks.
Hi, I'm Catherine Engelbrecht, founder and president of True the Vote.
Hey, Ganesh, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Hey, listen, I'm here with Debbie.
Hey, Catherine.
Hey, Debbie.
You know how crazy it is out there. Have you guys been digging into this whole issue of voter fraud?
Well, we have been working on something big. It's probably best we don't discuss it over the phone, but can we meet? I've been working with Greg Phillips. I don't know if I've ever introduced him to you, but he has a deep background in election intelligence. He's worked projects all over the world. He's a massive 30-year experience. We decided to test a hypothesis, and we went really big. And now we have something that we think you're going to really want to see. So I'll send you the address separately.
Now, Greg Phillips, what's your background that prepares you for this kind of work?
I've been in and around election intelligence and integrity for about 40 years. We've done investigations literally all over the world. It's a combination of data acquisition, data analysis, occasionally some in-depth data mining. Our ability to draw meaningful conclusions that link the who to the when to the where is significant in the space.
Catherine, you started the group called True the Vote in the year 2010. What was your mission or objective?
We just didn't have enough volunteers working at the polls in our local elections. So we began by training people to work in the polls. And then as we got further into it, we recognized, wow, some of the problems you see at the polls can be attributed to problems in the voter rolls. Well, what can we do about voter rolls? And so it turned into something much bigger than we had anticipated.
True the Vote has the largest store of election intelligence for the 2020 elections in the world. No one has more data than we do.
So I started True the Vote to ensure that every American voter has an opportunity to participate in elections.
I think I became familiar with your work when you gave congressional testimony. Now, that was in the year 2014. In fact, I met you through Debbie, and I think what's interesting is that you not only have known Debbie for years, but you trained her. And
absolutely. I was a bilingual co-watcher.
Oh, yes.
So my Spanish language came in very handy. I was a poll watcher in Rosenberg, and the poll judge was telling this couple that came in Spanish, who to vote for. And of course, she didn't really realize that I knew Spanish, and so there we go.
And you busted them.
I busted them.
Yeah. So Catherine, when you set up True the Vote, you set it up not so much, it's not a partisan organization. Is that because you saw shenanigans, problems with voting as coming out of both parties?
Oh, absolutely. Plus, we need parity of parties at the polls.
Well, you told me about this remarkable election in which you had vote harvesting and vote trafficking, but it was on behalf of a Republican candidate.
Exactly. In North Carolina, it was unique in that it actually overturned an election.
There's going to be a new election in the North Carolina congressional district, engulfed in a scandal over voting fraud.
This all centers around allegations that an operative for Harris then hired a team of people to harvest absentee ballots, paying them between $2 and $3 a vote.
So you have an activist, the guy's name was McCray Dowless, and he worked for the Bladen Improvement Association, which was a kind of an African-American get voters to the polls, but apparently they were doing all kinds of vote harvesting, and he learned the strategy. Then he broke with them, and he took his services to Mark Harris, a Republican, well, actually a pastor who was running.
Correct.
And Harris won. He pulled it off.
In 40 years of doing this, we've seen this over and over again. Sometimes the schemes are a little bit different. Sometimes it's people out banging on doors, gathering ballots. Sometimes the ballots are sent here, gathered here, deposited there. But the trafficking itself is always the same basic pattern. There's a nonprofit involved somewhere in the middle. There are people that are either collecting those ballots on the one hand or depositing those ballots on the other and getting paid for it.
In no case is it acceptable to be paid for your ballot or to accept some form of remuneration for your ballot. And in no way, in no time, is that legal.
I noticed, Catherine, that in the immediate aftermath of the election, when there were a lot of accusations and charges flying around, all reflecting these suspicions that something went deeply wrong, charges of foreign intervention, charges of machines, you and your organization were kind of dead silent. I got the impression that you were looking for a different approach.
Given the outliers that were introduced in such a major way in 2020, namely the privately funded drop boxes, the mass mail out of ballots, the hypothesis was if you were going to cheat, how might one go about this? That would be provable, trackable, traceable.
You said there might be some, let's just call them bad actors, who are delivering ballots systematically and illicitly to these mail-in drop boxes, and there might be a way to track them and to bust them.
We didn't know. We decided we're going to let the data tell the tale, and we collected together a team of highly skilled contractors and put together a plan to see where the data would take us.
And you will be amazed where it did take them. Welcome back to the English Spence Lake Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. Jeff, so what do you think about this digging in here?
Well, so far, it's very interesting what's been spoke about. I'm just wondering, at the final conclusion, how will they get something sorted out? Because there's been lots of time passed by since the election, the fraudulent election. And I think everybody tried to do their best to make sure that it was resolved. But there's so many of those bent ones that made sure that it wasn't, that this could happen again. This could happen at the elections or the winter coming up in winter time. So, Dave, how...
it's a great documentary, don't get me wrong. I think it's fantastic. A lot of work's gone into it. But at the same time, how will the documentary push it so these sort of things won't happen again? That's what I'm asking. It's a pointed question because, really truthfully, people can make documentaries every other couple of weeks or so, but you want answers. You want to know, is there a strategy out there that you can take this to a court and know that the court isn't on the opposition side so as it will fail? You see what I'm saying, Dave? I'm not being confrontational as the thing itself, but I'm just saying, I know there's a lot of work that's gone into this to show that there's and we said this since it happened, but what is the conclusion, even at the end of it, what is going to come out of it? Everybody knows it was a fraudulent election, but what can you do? Who can you take to court? Who can go on trial for it? That's just one thing I'd like to put your way, Dave. How will it be resolved? Which, don't get me wrong, I think it's a great documentary, 2000 Mules, but I'm still in mindset of, it's great, yeah, fantastic job, but how is this going to conclude? With that, Dave, let me pass it back to you.
Well, Jeff, I'm not going to put the cart before the horse. We do have to listen to this to the conclusion. And yeah, I'll have a few things that can be done at that point, okay? Because, yeah, you're right. We all know that it was, there was a lot of voter fraud and things of that nature. You bring up good points here. But really, you can't completely address how to keep it from happening again until you hear the entire thing. Because there are really some stunning facts here, including methods that have been used. And this will count not only in our midterm elections here in November, but it'll count all over the world in elections, some elections that have already taken place. I will say, though, before I start part three here, that the fact that True the Vote is instrumental in helping with this documentary trumps, no pun intended, the quote-unquote debunking that Reuters did of this documentary. Reuters came in and said, oh, well, this documentary, we're going to debunk it, in fact check it. It really is meaningless and all of this. It might have been, except for the fact that True the Vote had so much to do with tracking down the methods and showing the data. We're talking about an organization that is not partisan. You just heard how they went after a Republican candidate and an election had to be redone because of that. So whenever if you're listening to this, people, and please pass it around, pass this show around. Whenever you're listening to this, people, and your lefty friends say, well, this has been debunked by Reuters. Just give them the evidence here that this is based on evidence that comes from an organization that is not some Trump-centric right-wing organization. This is about the truth. And the English Defense League radio show is about the truth. And the things that you're about to hear are about the truth. All right, and now, Jeff, do we have anything out of chat before we hit part three?
Yeah, let's just check. Let's have a look. They're just listening to the show, guys. Sorry, they. I thought I put that in the comment or something. I was commented back, but they're just listening to what we about the show tonight, Dave. Okay.
Cool.
Thank you,
cool.
Mike.
All right, brother. All right. Okay, guys. You're listening to the English Defense League radio show. This next bit, part three, is going to be about 14 and a quarter minutes long. And to remind, this is 2,000 Mules by Dinesh D'Souza. Give us a listen.
What, Greg, is geo-tracking?
So the idea is to collect the signals that are emitted from your phone. Your cell phone is delivering information to apps that are collecting that thing. So there are four key coordinates: the lat long, the elevation, and the time. And with that data, we can then build a pattern of life around you. So that phone's here right now. Well, where's it going to be at 5 o'clock? And where's it going to be tonight?
Well, here's my cell phone. My cell phone is off. Can I be geo-tracked even with the cell phone being off?
Possibly.
Depending on the apps.
Depending on what marketing
companies do all day, every day.
Now, this is the point. We were at the Apple store and at CVS, and on both occasions, they knew where you were, evidently.
Absolutely.
And they were telling you about specials, and people have experience of this.
There's 300,000 or so apps that gather that data, and then they sell it to brokers.
Isn't it also true that this geo-tracking has now become a vital tool for the military, for the intelligence agencies, and for law enforcement?
Indeed. They're using it almost every day. I'll say that there's no question amongst anyone that I know in the community that many, if not all, of the people that were involved in the situation at the Capitol on January 6th were being tracked previous to January 6th, because they already knew what their pattern of life was. They already knew who to look at.
Many of the people who stormed the U.S. Capitol on January 6th left digital footprints that law enforcement has used in making arrests.
You're saying they must have known about these people before, because some of those guys were arrested one day, 3 days, 5 days after January 6th, and that's not enough time to do the geo-tracking analysis.
The very idea that you could go from the afternoon of January 6th to acquiring the data, tracking the data, unmask who actually owns that phone, which the government is required to do, and then get it to a grand jury, make an arrest in 72 hours?
Impossible.
It's not possible. They had to have been tracking the people in advance. But the fact of the matter is, these techniques are used every single day by law enforcement, intelligence community, the Department of Defense.
Was geo-tracking part of the way that the CIA was able to identify bin Laden?
It certainly played a role. It's even more sophisticated today than it was when bin Laden was disposed of. More and more apps are participating in this program, if you will.
The reliability of geo-tracking is not substantially different from the reliability of a fingerprint or the reliability of DNA. If it identifies your phone, now I could have given my phone to Debbie, but the simple truth of it is my phone was there on this particular date, and there's absolutely no question about that, right?
Correct.
Now, you decided to purchase through these brokers that make this information available to companies. They make it available all kinds of places to buy data. Let's talk about the methodology. You identified data in certain places, and by and large, you focused on the states where the election was decided. Tell us, what are the areas that you bought data for, and what were you looking for? And what's the time period?
October 1st through the election. In Georgia, we actually bought from October 1st through January 6th after the runoff. So we went in. We decided to do the Atlanta metro area because it picks up some rural areas, it picks up some urban areas, it picks up some suburban areas, 309 drop boxes in the area. And we thought, okay, well, this is a pretty good test. We, in essence, sort of fenced around those.
Geofencing.
And then we were able to make purchase of data of people that had been near those drop boxes, but also near the organization. Across the country, we bought 10 trillion signals.
When they give you this data that you then have to go through, what does this data look like?
It's a massive data transfer. We have more than a petabyte of data. You're talking about transacting hundreds of terabytes, so it's a significant move of data.
You have 10 trillion signals. That's a lot of signals. So what was the criterion that you set?
Final decision was, they had to have been to 10 or more drop boxes, meaning unique visits inside of a space, and 5 or more visits to one or more of these organizations.
Those were the outliers. It was such an aberrant pattern.
So what you're saying, I mean, it seems to me there's no reason for someone to go to even two drop boxes, but you're saying that maybe there's a conceivable reason someone did that. Let's identify a large number of drop boxes and multiple trips, and that way we're going to catch not all the offenders, right, but the worst offenders.
The way we would describe it is we want to absolutely ensure that we don't have false positives, meaning including people that should not have been included. We're not in any way saying that this is all there is. We're just saying that based on our criteria that we identified in Atlanta, 242 people that went to an average of 24 drop boxes in 8 organizations during a 2-week period.
242 mules. Now let's pause for a second. What is a mule?
When we started the project, we had to figure out how are we going to describe the individuals and the elements involved. And to us, it felt a lot like a cartel. It felt a lot like trafficking. It can be trafficking in drugs, trafficking in humans. In this instance, it's ballot trafficking. And so we began to use that vernacular. A mule is, by our definition, a person that is involved in picking up ballots from locations and running them to the drop boxes. So you have the collectors on the one hand, you have the stash houses, which are the nonprofits, and then you have the mules that are doing the drop.
What do we know about them? Who are they?
Well, first let me say, this is not grandma out walking her dog. Bad backgrounds, bad reputations. We've had encounters with several that are not terribly positive.
Violent guys.
Can be. They are interested in one thing, that's money.
Do we know, by the way, how much they get paid?
According to the people that have shared information with us, it's generally $10 a ballot. In the Georgia runoff, that number was higher.
2020, of course, was the year of the Antifa riots, the BLM riots, and it was all going on in the months and weeks leading up to the election.
Right.
And so in the data, you have geo-tracking data of the drop boxes, but you also have data on the rioters.
There were several different violent BLM Antifa riots in Atlanta. In one of them, we had 36 of our mules participate in these violent riots. There's an organization that tracks the device IDs across all violent protests around the world. We took a look at our 242 mules in Atlanta, and sure enough, dozens and dozens and dozens of our mules show up on the ACLED databases. So again, this is not grandma out walking her dog. These are, violent criminals sometimes.
There's not just a criminal element, but there is an ideological element, and that there's an overlap between people. I mean, you're not going to go to an Antifa riot and find it overpopulated with patriots or Christians or Republicans. These are people on generally the far left. And turns out that these are people who also help to make up the mule population.
I think that's also borne out in our target organizations themselves. They're not like Republican organizations.
Either
right?
Left-wing Democratic right. organizations. Yeah. Let's zoom in here. So the mule is the delivery man,
the delivery woman.
And what you're saying is they have a starting point or multiple starting points, and then they have the end point. And the end point is the drop box.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
But you're saying that they get the ballots from somewhere, and then they go deposit them in
right.
multiple drop boxes.
One of the questions that will come up in the work that we've done is, well, how do you know that this wasn't just somebody that's got a big family and they just deposited a bunch of ballots once? Or how do you know that this person didn't just work at a location that is near a drop box and so they're constantly going by a drop box? And the elements that are additive here, the going to the nonprofit, the ability to identify the pattern of approach to a drop box and that it is going not past a drop box and on, but directly to a drop box and back to another point and then to another Dropbox, all of these things.
I mean, isn't the timing significant? If some guy's going to a Dropbox at 2 a.m. in the morning, presumably he's not like out for a walk.
Right.
So we're going to show you a visual, a pattern of life that someone can see and look at rather than just a whole spreadsheet of numbers, being able to look at it in this manner. What you see here on the screen is a single person on a single day in Atlanta, Georgia. They went to 28 drop boxes in 5 organizations in one day.
What are the orange dots?
Those are drop boxes.
And what is the blue tracks?
That is a smoothed out pattern of life so that we could take the sort of the movement of the individual cell phone signals, marry them together into something that's visual so that you can see movement on the individual. To get to some of these drop boxes, you had to be intentional. You had to get off the highway, you had to go on surface streets, you had to turn in somewhere in order to get to those drop boxes.
And the circles, I take it, reflect the nonprofit centers? Are that the places where the ballots originate?
The stash houses, where the ballots are collected and handed to the mules to take to the drop boxes.
Now let's move over to Arizona. How many mules in Arizona?
A little over 200.
In
Phoenix alone.
The reason I think this is all very significant is because these were very close states, right? What was the margin in Georgia?
10 or 11,000, I think, in the end.
In the end.
And Arizona also extremely close.
Yeah, very close.
Then you moved on to
Wisconsin. But our initial look was in Milwaukee. Gross numbers were a little down, but the average number of visits to the drop boxes was up. So instead of having only 24 unique visits, I think we averaged 28.
I mean, maybe I've heard people in Milwaukee are really hardworking, and maybe they just went overtime. And then let's go to Michigan.
We have more than 500 mules that we've identified in Michigan. Again, the number of boxes is lower.
Now, where in Michigan?
Detroit mainly. But we have people in Detroit that went to more than 100 drop boxes.
100. I mean, this is stunning because it's like, I cannot think of a rational, kind of innocent reason for someone to do that. It just doesn't exist.
No.
So any reasonable person would say, you're onto something big here.
You should take a closer look.
Let's go to Pennsylvania, critical state. I think it was Pennsylvania that really gave Biden the election.
Philadelphia alone, we've identified more than 1,100 mules at rates well beyond anything we've seen. Closer to 50 drop boxes each.
Each guy going to 50 drop boxes?
Each. 1,100. We saw people driving back and forth to New Jersey across the bridge.
But you're saying the ballots may not even be from Philadelphia or from Pennsylvania.
Well, we're saying somebody should investigate.
But you're saying that the origin point appears to be Jersey. Now, running 1,100 mules times 50, we are 50,000 drop box visits by the mules alone in Philadelphia or greater Philadelphia area. Now, as you were assessing this data, you had, the two of you, and I'm not sure which of you came up with this, a genius idea in my view. For, what was your? Of course, who else? Well, to validate your data.
We chose to look at two murders that were ebbing on cold case status.
And in Atlanta, 8-year-old Sequoria Turner was killed by rounds of gunfire shot into a car that happened just outside this Wendy's parking lot.
Bought the data and the team got to work.
You could see visually that there were only a handful of unique devices that could possibly have pulled the trigger. So this is the area, and this is where the Wendy's was.
And are you saying that each green dot is the same guy, but moving through time?
Each color is one person. The shooting actually occurred right here in this parking lot. Sort of inside of this circle are really the only potentially legitimate shooters. Each of these devices has a unique device ID. And we turned the bulk of this information over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Now, I read, they've arrested two suspects.
They have.
Two suspected gang members will appear in court this morning on charges that include the shooting death of 8-year-old Sequoria Turner.
And isn't it true that this tracking, these movements, just parallels exactly the work you're doing with the mules?
Exactly.
And there you go. Welcome back to the English Fencing Radio Show with your host, Jeff Danger Man Mitchell. Jeff, got to ask you here. I know you have to call back in pretty soon. Did you really think that the tracking of cell phones was that detailed or could be that well mapped out?
I think, obviously, it is. It's the way that they keep a track on all sorts of things, and it comes down to tracking people, mules or whatever you call these people that's dropping these boxes off. Of course it is, Dave. It's obvious that it is being used this way. Yeah, it's quite obvious that that is the whole case. Every device that you use, you're being actually tracked by Google or by them or whoever it might be. But we know nothing is secure unless you've got what they call a dummy phone or something that stops them tracking you. Do you know what I'm saying? You can buy them. I can't remember exactly what they're called, but you can buy these phones that stops the tracking. They're quite pricey, but if you don't want to be tracked and to be used in their data, that's the only solution. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but I was talking to a friend the other week about it. You can get them. I think you can get them online, actually. What it does is it just stops them tracking you as such. With that, Dave, back to you.
Well, Jeff, I can tell you what it is. While this was going on, and while I was listening to this, I looked up some things. See, I knew about the cell phone tracking and everything, that they could track your signal and find out where you are and that sort of thing. I decided to do a little bit of quick research. And what you're talking about is a Faraday bag or a Faraday sleeve or a Faraday cage for a cell phone. If you go to, this is for our UK listeners, if you go to amazon.co.uk and look up cell phone Faraday cage, you will find several sleeves, bags, things of that nature that have woven into them a metallic mesh that will stop the cell phone signal. You won't be able to get a call. You won't be able to call out, and no one will be able to track your device, be it a cell phone or whatever it is. And I knew about this.
That's a good idea, Dave. Can you just mention that again to our listeners that might be just joining or listening, that to stop this, what we've been hearing, I've got a feeling someone's tracking me. I'll keep hearing my phone go beep. So I don't know. But it's a good bit of advice for people if you don't want your phones to be or to be tracked as such, that one of these Faraday bags or a little cage, whatever it's called, you can actually get them if you go to Amazon. Or there's that, probably go to eBay, you'd probably come across them as well, wouldn't you, Dave? But I'd like to pass it back to you on that, Dave. Just a bit of good advice, I think, for the public.
Noel, I appreciate it, Jeff. And you might be able to even get them at Tesco in the UK, and I know you can get them at Walmart here in the United States because I just looked there. And the prices are very reasonable. I mean, we're talking about something along the lines of being able to get a decent one for under 50 American dollars, and certainly that would be something along the lines of under 30 pounds UK. So that's a way to help keep your phone from being tracked. But then again, if you absolutely don't want to be tracked for your movements, you can just leave the bloody thing at home. But I have to confess that while I knew about cell phone tracking, I had no idea that you could actually go out there and buy the information and collate the data as well as True the Vote did. They have done an impressive job of this, and this shows really how how the sausage is made. This shows how these people were able to get away with what they were able to get away with, but they didn't get away with it because now we know their method. And Jeff, is there anything out of chat before we hit part four?
Yeah. Just trying to have a look at no, just having a look at the last chat, and nothing. It's like the boys just listening to what we're saying. I'm glad you, Bigfoot, and Duck Northwest Media are with us tonight. I've just passed it back to you, Doug.
Well, all right, all right. And I am glad as well that they are with us. Okay, guys, we're gonna crack on here, and at some point Jeff's going to call back in. But
no,
here you
done,
go with...
I've done it already, guys.
Oh, have you? Okay, good enough, Jeff. Okay, yeah. Good. All right, guys, this is going to be part four, 2,000 Mules. You're listening to the English Defense League Radio Show, and this will be just over 11 minutes, guys. Here we go.
It's one thing to have the scientific evidence, which is persuasive on its own merits, but do you have video evidence?
We do.
How much of it do you have?
4 million minutes of surveillance video around the country.
Official surveillance video of these mail-in drop boxes.
Yes.
How do you get it?
You can file for open records requests. Any citizen can do this. It was a very difficult series of steps that had to be followed to procure the actual surveillance video.
You have video in Georgia?
We do.
Is it video from the presidential election, the runoff election, or both?
Both.
Do you have video from other states?
Some video from Arizona. We have recently learned video was specifically turned off on particular drop boxes.
In which state?
Arizona. Wisconsin, it turns out, even though the rules required them to have video.
Did they do the video?
No, they did not.
There should be video on every Dropbox.
Indeed.
Given today's kind of cost of technology, it would not have been that hard to do it. And you sent me a screenshot, Catherine, where you were requesting video, and I believe it was the state of Georgia saying, this video does not exist, and we can't tell you why it doesn't exist.
Right, that was in Fulton County. We have correspondence like that from a lot of states. In the absence of video, and that geospatial data is key to decoding, you know, what the greater scheme was. But in the case of what we're going to show you now, what kicks it up a notch is that we have the geospatial data to support the video.
Let's talk about some of the videos.
So we're going to show you a couple different ones. This particular individual we have in a number of different locations at a number of different times. He's actually a mule.
This is the official surveillance video of Georgia.
Absolutely.
And so as the person pulls up, they don't even bother parking. Of course, it's the middle of the night, so why would they? He gets out, approaches the box. When people walk up with intention to cheat, they look around, they basically walk fairly quickly, they try to stuff him in, they try to get out of there. In this case, he drops a few on the ground, pick him up, stuff him into the box. Then he hustles back and hustles out of there. So this is what it looks like. It doesn't necessarily look like, you know, hundreds of ballots being stuffed in.
You don't need a whole lot of fraud. You just need a little in the right places over time.
Is there a way to estimate or even roughly how many ballots are being tossed into a box at a given time?
It might be 3 or 5 or 6 or 10 or something like that.
The idea is to stay under the radar. And as Greg said, the number is, you know, 3, 5, 10 ballots. But then they're not done for the day either. They're going place to place to place, day upon day upon day. And so that will not show up in your chain of custody documents, your tracking documents that would identify a big blip.
I mean, they're not going up and dumping in, you know, buckets full of ballots. On the other hand, we've seen circumstances where it appears that buckets full of ballots showed up. There's one box in Gwinnett County that had a chain of custody document with 1,962 ballots noted on this. And first of all, that's roughly 10 times what we normally see. We sorted through the geodata, found a few hundred people. Okay, well, that's pretty odd. We have video of all of this, and guess what it shows? 271 people approached that ballot drop box during that 25-hour period. 271. 1,962 ballots were deposited.
Wow. Here are election officials pulling out of that drop box two full duffel bags containing over 1,900 ballots. Let's look at another one.
Yeah, let's take a look at...
Interesting thing about this person is the device seems to live in South Carolina. So this person isn't even from Georgia. She was here during both election cycles, but is not a resident of the state.
But as she approaches the drop box, she never looks at the trash can, right?
She's looking the other way.
But the other thing she has is she has gloves on. what one of our analysts noticed was these surgical gloves only appeared from December 23rd forward in the runoff. So we didn't see a lot of them previous to December 23rd, and we couldn't figure out why. And then it just dawned on us, well, on December 22nd, there was an indictment handed down in Arizona for people that had stuffed ballots, and the way the FBI nailed them was fingerprints. And then lo and behold, the next day and days forward.
So this video is now from the Georgia runoffs. This is January of 21.
This That's particular right. one is at approximately 1 o'clock in the morning on January the 5th.
Stuffs the ballots in there, like a small stackish, maybe three, maybe four. Takes them off, and then puts them in a trash can that she never looked at.
So she knew it was there.
She knew it was there, right? And so we have her on a number of locations.
She's an out-of-state mule, and then this is in no way the only drop box that she attended.
That's right.
No, she goes to dozens and dozens over the course of these two elections.
Who's next?
What you're going to see is he approaches the drop box on his bike. He also has a backpack on. Pulled the ballots out of his backpack.
Taking his time,
digging around, looking for some ballots. Finally gets that, pulls them out. Okay, now I'm set. And he'll put them in. But you also see him get sort of frustrated as he starts to leave, because guess what? At this point, they had started requiring the mules, apparently, to take pictures of the stuffing of the ballots. It appears that that's how they get paid. So they take a picture, I stuff it in, they take a picture, not a selfie, but a picture of the actual ballot going in. But this guy gets frustrated, so he actually has to park his bike, get off.
So if you were there just casting your own ballot, what reason in the world would you have to come back and take a picture of the box?
Then he kneels down.
Looking around.
Take some pictures.
Okay, the next one.
Yeah, so let me show you Dog Guy. So Dog Guy, middle of the day, this is actually at a polling place. So the people in line are waiting to go in and vote early. They're doing it the right way. Okay, now you've got some other people going to walk up. This lady doesn't care, but this next guy cares. He's watching the whole thing. The guy looks up, talks to him.
Got the ballots under his arm already. Now he's got the rest that he pulled out of the bag.
And he's going to get his camera ready to take the pictures as he puts them in there. If you consider the brazenness of this, right? This is the middle of the day. There's people sitting there watching you cheat. People that are doing it the right way.
But it's difficult for them to know what to do,
right,
except observe and maybe say, what's going on
That's
here?
Right.
What did I just see?
They wonder, what does this all even mean if this is happening in broad daylight and nobody's doing anything to stop it?
And so these are the kind of things. 4 million minutes of this. This was an organized effort to subvert a free and fair election. This is organized crime. You can't look at this data in its aggregate and believe anything otherwise. That's especially true when you consider that in places like Georgia, it was only decided by 10,000, 12,000 votes. And you look at 5,000 visits just from our mules, it's not a leap to say, yes, this would have made a difference.
Adding these numbers up, we have 2,000 plus mules based upon not searching these whole states. And
right,
remember, we're only talking about a small number of states. We're not talking about the whole country.
We're not even talking about whole states.
Right.
That's right.
And we're also talking about a gross undercount of the actual number of mules, because you set a high bar. They had to go to 10 drop boxes. So if there's a mule who went to 7 drop boxes, you wouldn't catch that guy.
And they had to go to nonprofits. So they had to meet those two criteria and then go to one of the geofence drop boxes. If they met the two criteria but went to a post office box, we're not going to look at them.
One of the slogans of the Democrats through all this debate has been, make every vote count. And I think we can now see in a chilling way that this is kind of what they mean. What they mean is, it doesn't matter if all kinds of illegal ballots are being dropped in, let's just count them.
Now the narrative needs to be that this is the most secure election. This is the most fabulous election we've ever had. Pay no mind
to the millions of Americans that are saying something is not right. This does not make sense. Nothing to see here. Just smile and wave, boys.
I mean, wouldn't it be an accurate summary to say that these voter bills that the Democrats are desperate to enact, to federalize the election, isn't it that they want to take all these special provisions that have enabled what we've described or you've described in the 2020 election and make it permanent?
If we don't wake up and do the hard roll up your sleeves work that it's going to take to reel this all back together, then yes, all the pieces are in place for our election system to be in permanent lockdown. And it will be done under the watchful eye of a media that will tell you it's all just fine.
It seems like they are subverting democracy in the public pretense of protecting it.
Absolutely. And it won't stop unless we stop it.
If I look across the swath of Republicans,
yeah,
this is not the kind of issue that they seem to be comfortable with. It's almost like they would rather endure.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. As I said.
Well, it's a gamble, right? Because
yeah,
the ones that are enduring,
mm-hmm,
are currently elected and in power. When you watch these brazen acts and nobody says a word because they're scared that they're going to be sued, because they're scared that they're going to be canceled, because they're scared that they're going to be silenced, that kind of chilling effect is exactly what they want.
And as I said, on the other side of fear is freedom. If you never get past the fear, you're never free.
And what a way to end the part four, and basically the last audio we're going to have time to play. Welcome back to the English Defense League Radio Show with your host, Jeff Dangerman Mitchell. Jeff, this is the last audio we're going to have time to play, and what do you think so far? Amazing, eh?
Well, I think it's more enlightening, especially the term of mules being used, which did jump out at me. Use that term, phraseology, is a basic way of using what was actually happening and, you know, sorting out the circumstances. That's probably why the title of the documentary was made, because it just basically made it a lot easier just to show exactly what was going on across them certain states. And that's just a little pinprick of what actually was going on, because we know it was on a massive scale. And if I don't get it right, as they said at the end, I don't get it right, it's the end of so-called democracy, isn't it? It's the, sadly, it's probably been a long time that you can say that, but it's probably been going on for quite a while, isn't it? You know, the stealing, doing things, or didn't quite get it right, so the wrong president got in, and so on and so forth. Once again, it just shows you the corruption, the evilness of these people to keep power. The power struggle is amazing. Satanic beings as they are do love their power, don't they, Dave? But very interesting and thought-provoking as well. Hopefully we'll react to some other parts from next week. Hope the great listeners out there have enjoyed listening to them as much as myself and Dave have been presenting 2,000 mules to you in segments. So with that, Dave, very enjoyable to listen to, and I took everything on board, and the last thing that the guy said is, if we don't get it right, then, you know, all sorts of issues. Now, I agree with what he said in the last part. With that, Dave, back to you.
I agree too, Jeff. I agree as well. And I have to say, this particular show just went by at lightning speed. I mean, it was amazing. The whole thing was so enthralling, listening to this, and I just hope that our listeners enjoy it. I hope the Duck Northwest Media and Bigfoot in the chat enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed having them, and invite them back anytime, obviously, and we invite others to get into the chat as well, and please share this show around, and we're going to hit this again next week. and conclude it all and talk about some other things involved with this, because it is very important to know how this is done, because, as I say, this isn't just an American problem. I'm convinced that this has been going on, things like this have been going on across the planet. And part of the reason I'm convinced of that is you look at Justin Trudeau, you look at Emmanuel Macron, you look at Jacinda Ardern. These people could not have gotten more than one term in office, because the moment they got in, they began clamping down with the tyranny on their own people. It's diabolical. The only way that they could retain power would be to use techniques like this to do that. And I think it's up to us, Jeff, to share these truths with the people. And this isn't just coincidence. This is real. And yeah. I'm going to go ahead now, brother, and do my finals and that sort of thing. Please check out the Unpleasant Blind Guy page at Spreaker.com. My regular show times are 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, and that's 6 p.m. in the U.K. And I put on new shows on at midnight on Saturdays Eastern in the United States, and that is 5 a.m. on Saturdays in the U.K. And I'm also on with Ken McClinton at TECNTV.com on the Exceptional Conservative Show each Friday morning at about 2 a.m. in the U.K. and each Thursday night after 9 p.m. Eastern Time in the United States. And I'm also available through SHR Media. And I just want to say to the foot soldiers and angels and all of the truth tellers out there, everyone who understands that something is wrong and has the bravery to step out and say, hey, something is wrong, be prosperous, be blessed, and absolutely no surrender ever. Jeff, you know what, man? I got another postcard from the Jam. They're down in the Namib Desert there in Southwest Africa, and they're riding dune buggies all over the place. And they're doing donuts and all this sort of thing. They're just having a great time.
Well, I'm not surprised. We know what they're like. You know, they're just doing their thing. I mean, I wish I'd have gone on a break with them doing all that. They're probably enjoying themselves. Although I did hear them getting chased by, one of these people in the jungle or somewhere. They got chased or something or other. They was doing something that goes against their tribal thing that was happening, and they got chased across part of Africa a while ago. So
I think that was last week when they were riding the zebras. I think that offended some people.
it obviously did, because they were being chased by a lot of these headhunters, you know, the ones that we're talking about, cannibalistic ritual sort of things. I mean, that tribe, you know, you don't mess with them, do you, really? But the Jam seem to want to. I don't know why, you know. It gets them out. They can get themselves in so much trouble. But then again, that's a minute, mate.
Yeah, that's that. Also, well, you know, they're on vacation for this year.
I've got to thank Northwest Media. Good to have you tonight. And of course, Bigfoot, always a pleasure to see you, brother. You might have missed, we done a 7/7 tribute this week. You might not have realised that we was doing a special. I'm sorry, you know, but I know you'd have probably been there. But I wanted to give them a bit of a heads up that we did do that special Thursday just gone day. But anyway, we will hope to see you both next week. It's been great to see you both in the chat, having a bit of a conversation, finding another place that you want to catch up with someone, and that's good to see Bigfoot has helped you out there. That's what it's all about, communication. But with that, Dave, I've got to thank all our listeners out there, wherever you might be, wherever part of the world you might be. Thank you for listening to the English Trans League Radio Show tonight, and as you know, you'll catch us again next Sunday, unless we have a show that might come up that falls in the week, and we will inform you the week before. Okay, just give you a heads up. So with that, Dave, I think we're done. I think we're done for this evening. I think the time has come. Just like that.
It did, Jeff. And I just want to remind the people, our shows are archived here at blogtalkradio.com and on the TECNTV.com radio page. The special that Jeff is talking about, the one that we did on Thursday, is called 77 plus 17. And if you would like, please go and give that a listen and pass it around. It was our tribute to the victims and families and loved ones of the 7/7 attacks in London and the 7/7 BLM attack in Dallas years later. So, yeah, please give that a listen. And, yeah, Jeff, the Alex and the Bandits are ready. They're up on stage. Yo, man, put that cigarette out, okay? You're ready to start. Stop licking those peanuts to death.
Yeah, they're ready to roll. Alex is giving us a thumbs up. But wait, hang on, Alex. We're all back there. We'll let you know. I'll give you a thumbs up, and you can roll it. Okay, Dave, but we've passed it back to you. So do you want to give a shout, and I will give him a thumbs up. Over to you, mate.
All right, boys. Take it away. God bless everyone.
News of the world said we are hooligans. We're the only people to defend your rights. And I won't stand by and watch this country die. So roll Britannia with the EDL. Go! Mentor!
well done, Alex. Well done. He just gives the victory sign as he's walked off, though. Yeah, bless you, Alex, and we'll see you. We'll see you next week. You take care. Dave, I think that's it, mate. We've done our thing tonight, and I hope everybody has enjoyed the show as much as yourself and myself have been for putting this show on for you guys out there. It's only right you know the truth. The truth, you know, we will always tell. That's what we are. We are the truth tellers. And sometimes some people might not want to hear the truth, and sometimes it might be a bit uncomfortable. But, you know, it must be uncomfortable for those that are totally against what we stand for. Freedom of speech, freedom of choice, and against the cultures of death. Because we would always be against that type of people. But anyway, we're done for tonight. All I've got to say is, this is the English Defence. I've got to thank the two guys in the chat room tonight, Buckwest Media, and of course our Bigfoot as well. So a big victory to you guys. Thank you for joining us. And I'll just say, this is the English Defence League Radio Show. Signing off for tonight, but you know what? Dave and myself, we will be back next week with another dangerous show about that. So take care, stay safe, and see you next week. And no surrender ever. God bless. Bye-bye.